focus on this week of prayer for promoting Christian unity, a special week by the theme this year of praying without ceasing. It's a theme which points to a special anniversary, a century since Paul Watson of the Society of the Atonement at Greymore in the United States observed that first church unity octave, something I explained in detail in a previous broadcast dated January 18th. You can find it on our website at www.vaticanradio.org. But getting back to this broadcast, in a few moments I'll be taking a look at some other aspects relating to ecumenism. That's with the same guest, Father James Pugliese, the Minister General of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement and Director of the Rome-based Ecumenical Centre Pro Unione. And it seems I asked an awkward question. In his words, a trick question. Just listen. Do you think that more has been done at a grassroots level rather than a theological level in paving the way
that's
Christian unity?
Yeah, I would call that a trick question, and I usually try to avoid trick questions, but let's look at it this way, that it's kind of comparing two different realities. There has been tremendous progress, I think, made on both levels. The problem is that when we start making some determinations, some people are trying to call this the ecumenism of the people, that is, that the people are going their own direction and forgetting about the so-called official ecumenism or the ecumenism of the hierarchy. Both are necessary. We realize historically when we looked at the church, many things entered in as change because they weren't initiated from above, that they did initiate from the bottom. And they were eventually received as legitimate change within the church. But at the same time, if the gap grows too great between the body of the church and the head, the so-called head of the church, with the hierarchical dimension of the church, we forget really what the teaching of the Second Vatican Council is all about. Because remember, the decree on the church, the constitution on the church, changed its view of looking at the church as being defined as first and foremost by the hierarchy to being defined first and foremost as the people of God. And then inserting in the people of God the hierarchy at the service of the people of God. And I think this is a correct theological balance that sometimes we feel the pinches here because the faithful who are the people of God want to move a little bit more rapidly and maybe in a different direction. And we have the teaching of the church in the Second Vatican Council and even before with someone like Cardinal Newman about the sensus fidelium, that is the sense of faith that resides in the faithful. And I think we really need to consider that even more importantly, because there has to be a dialogue between these two levels. So I would say that there has been tremendous progress on both levels. One, that the people of God have received what went on at the Second Vatican Council and the ecumenical progress since then. And then secondly, on the level of the hierarchy and the official dialogues, great progress has been made in terms of common understanding of our faith.
Do you think people are interested in ecumenism in general?
They are and they aren't.
I mean, the average churchgoer.
Yeah, well, it depends what country we're looking at, I think. I think that's the way I would say it, because my confreres say, what are you doing ecumenism in a country that's 93% or 95% Catholic? Well, it means that we, and as Catholics in this country, are most authentically Catholic. And we know that when we look at our church, that in many cases we're not authentically Catholic. We're not conforming to really what the gospel wants of us, what the church wants of us in terms of our own commitment and witness in the world. So from that point of view, I think ecumenism becomes important because it gives some people the right to ask questions about their faith. Faith is something that has to be interrogated. It has to be pushed. It has to be understood because it is a part of the mystery of what God gives us and calls us to. And obviously no mystery can we fully grasp because then it no longer is a mystery, but it calls us further and further into that. So in a place where, or a country where the majority of people are Catholics, ecumenism is very important because usually it means they can talk with other brothers and sisters who are Christians about their faith. Because in an overly Catholic church, one would say, well, it's given for granted. And so it's very easy to be Catholic, but it's not really, because there's no intelligence of the faith, there's no understanding of the faith, and therefore there's no incarnation of the faith. So in that context, it's very important for one reason. In other contexts where the church is a minority, it's very important because sometimes for the survival of the church, the only way is to do this together. as Christians. And of course, I think that it's important for the gospel itself, because if we cannot witness to the gospel together, if we cannot act together in the world as Christians, well, then what is the meaning of this gospel? Why is Jesus so unique? And that was the whole question of a document that came out some years ago that caused a lot of ink to be spilt on pages, Dominus Iesus, the uniqueness of Jesus as our Savior.
If Father Paul Watson were to appear suddenly today, do you think he'd be disappointed, or do you think he'd be happy about what's happened since in this century?
I think he would be very excited about some of the things that have happened. And that's a very good question, actually. I've thought about that several times. Because he, being an Anglican in the very beginning, wanting to see communion between the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church, and because of certain decisions that were made of the Episcopal Church in the United States at the turn of the century, that is the 1800s to the 1900s, said we were not going in the direction that would lead us to Christian unity. We have a similar situation today in the Anglican communion today, where there are many questions that are being raised by Anglicans throughout the world. And I think that he would be happy that we've gone this far, and I think he would be saddened by the fact that within in the church that he loves so much, the Anglican church, he still sees this tension that resides, that has not been able to be resolved within the Anglican church itself. And I know that many sincere Anglicans, from left or right, however you want to describe their allegiance, are very saddened by this. And as Catholic ecumenists, we don't encourage them to continue to split apart. No, we encourage them to continue to talk to one another, because nothing is so important that what should divide them, because we don't want to see another Reformation. We don't want to see another drastic tearing apart of the Church itself, especially within the same confession. So obviously, we promote them staying together. We promote them speaking to one another to find a way forward, because they won't find a way forward, but it is the prayer that will open them up to finally saying the Spirit is leading them forward. That's what I think is important about prayer, because it opens us to a force that goes beyond us, because real prayer is not just asking something of God. It's listening first and foremost. And then secondly, it's really realizing what God has already done to answer what that petition is. But all our prayers really needs to turn to recognizing who God is in our life, so that we can really become the authentic creatures that he wants us to be in his plan of salvation.
Is music part of that prayer?
Oh, so much so. I think, you know, singing brings the soul alive. It's a sense of unity and communion and harmony, because when you realize that you have so many individual people who are created that way, that can produce a sound that is so harmonious. And even when there's dissonance, it brings us to an understanding of the reality of our life together. But just the dynamics of singing is very important, because when you sing, you have to take in lots of oxygen. Oxygen brings life to the body, and therefore it makes us alive. And I think that's the really important part. And you know, some of the first heresies were propagated because of singing. Arius was a hymn writer, and he propagated his heresy by writing hymns, maybe like taking the song Michael Row the Boat Ashore and saying, you know, Jesus is not really God, he's only man. And so, you know, when you sing something, things keep rolling around in your head, and so people began to believe these things. And the church combated it by writing new hymns.
Many of the hymns were written by Protestants.
Yes, we have a rich heritage of the Wesleyans, for example, whose anniversary we celebrated just recently, Charles Wesley. Yes, many of those hymns. We just finished the Christmas season, all the Christmas hymns that we traditionally sung, most of them have been written by Protestants. So we have a rich heritage, and many of the texts go back to where? The Bible. They go back to biblical texts, and they express in many ways the completeness of the theology that we can't do always in the prayers that we say. Because usually texts, good texts anyway, hymn texts are poetic, and sometimes they leave those verbs out and they allow us to make the connection both in our minds and then eventually in our lives.
Is there anything you want to add?
Well, just that we encourage your hearers to join with all of us in this anniversary of 100 years and of 40 years of praying for the unity of the Church, but most of all to realize that prayer in daily life, because it's not just a week of prayer, it is a daily event. Every celebration of the Eucharist that we do is a prayer for unity, because the Eucharist means unity. And we need to pray that God will open our hearts and prepare us to receive that gift. We're not creating the unity. We have to receive that gift from God when we have been prepared sufficiently for it.
and act like Christians.
Especially. That's the heart of it. It doesn't mean anything to call oneself Christian, but to be Christian in an authentic way means to live that gospel authentically.
Warm thanks there to Father James Pugliese, Minister General of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement and Director of the Rome-based Ecumenical Centre, Centro Pro Unione. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.